Hello and welcome into this week's edition of the Rookie Stripes podcast here on Racing News Now. I'm Garth, that's Tyler. What's up?
What up?
Living the dream.
Nightmares are dreams too. I feel like I say that every week at this point.
Well, it's true though.
It is true.
But lots of racing this weekend. Supposed to be the biggest day of racing, and it turned out to be a show. Probably the worst day in racing outside of one particular race that had to deal with a rain delay on top of that. But let's start off. Let's just get through Charlotte. There wasn't much to talk about with Charlotte. The truck race was dominated by Corey Heim, and then he got DQ'd at the end because they didn't get all the lug nuts tight, which they even knew. He asked them on the radio, and they were like, yeah, we didn't get one of the lugs tight. Apparently, they didn't get three of them tight. And so they knew it, and they knew they were going to get disqualified. So Corey, I think he is either second or third. He ended up like finishing on track.
But
got credited with last. Nick Sanchez picks up his second win. Congrats to him. Great to see Nick Sanchez finally winning races. But outside of that, good top five or good top four finish for Matt Mills. Good to see him up there. Stuart Friesen finally running up front again. Caden Honeycutt was fast until he wasn't. Yeah, that's about all I got for trucks.
Yeah, that's about it. Not a lot happened in that race.
The only thing I got for Xfinity is Austin Hill sucks, and NASCAR is a joke for not suspending him.
Oh, yeah, he should be suspended multiple races for that.
Suspend him the rest of the season. Like, there is no place for that. That is no different than when Kyle Busch wrecked Ron Hornaday in that truck race 10, 15 years ago, whatever that was now.
No, yeah. The only difference there is Cole Custer didn't, like, smack the wall head on. So,
yeah.
It's the same intent. He turned into a little crybaby anytime anything happens to him, and it's starting to get really old. He's got that RCR mentality of everybody owes him everything. So,
yep.
At least he fits in well.
Oh, he sure fits in well. That's for sure. He'll be a good teammate for Austin Dillon. It'll be the Austin and Austin show.
Yeah, right.
Running around in 30th every week.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because we know Austin Hill's not going to do any better than that in Cup.
No, we've known that for years now.
No, he's lucky to be doing as good as he is in Xfinity. The dude has no talent outside of super speedways.
Well, what little talent that takes.
Yeah, exactly. But Chase Elliott comes down, wins the race. Funny how everybody complains when Kyle Busch wins an Xfinity race, but nobody cares when Chase Elliott wins.
I'm going to complain both ways. I hate it when Cup drivers are in Xfinity.
You're an equal
trucks.
Opportunity hater.
I equal non-opportunity.
That's right. Good run for pretty much all of Junior Motorsports, though. Brandon Jones second, Sammy Smith third, Sam Mayer fourth. I mean, the only one we're missing here is Justin Allgaier, who ended up 33rd after a crash. But I'm pretty sure he was fast as well. I don't really remember. Oh, yeah, he won both stages. So, yeah, it was turning into a very good Junior Motorsports day until it wasn't, at least for Allgaier.
Sounds like every week.
Yeah, pretty much. Noah Gragson, though, top 10 in the first race for Rhett Jones Racing. So, cool to see them expanding and doing well. Kyle Busch in his first Xfinity race with RCR couldn't even muster a top five.
Half the field's Cup drivers.
That was an RCR car, right?
The 33, I think it was.
Racing Reference has the owner listed as Josh Rayum.
I don't know.
I don't think that's correct.
I have no idea.
I mean, yes, Josh Rayum has fielded the 33 car in the past, but I'm 99% sure that was 100% an RCR car.
Yeah, I don't know, dude.
Huh. Either way, weird, interesting. But that's about it for Xfinity. Not a whole lot happening there either. And then the Cup race, not a whole lot happening there either. Christopher Bell wins the rain-shortened race. Kyle Larson did not get to do the double because rain affected both races. Pushed the Indy 500 back and then ended the Cup race early, which was really weird because from all accounts, including from drivers such as Denny Hamlin, the track would have been ready within like 30 minutes of when they called it. So I don't know why they put so much effort into drying the track and then just called it right before they were ready to go back racing.
My understanding is Fox made the call.
Of course Fox made the call, because Fox makes the call on everything. Why do we let Fox make the call on anything?
Well, because the only way NASCAR makes any money is TV deals.
See, and that needs to change somehow. I don't know how it changes, but that needs to change.
Oh, and that's the same across every network. I mean, if the Indy 500 had been postponed to Monday, it would have been aired on USA Network.
No, oh, I know. I saw that.
Because French tennis is more important than the Indy 500.
Okay, fair enough, I guess.
No. No, it's not.
That should tell you exactly how much NBC really cares about IndyCar.
Yeah, but the problem is, I don't think Fox would do any better.
No, that's true. Yeah, I forgot about that. They said Fox was trying to get IndyCar on the next contract. I forgot about that.
Yeah, it's between NBC or Fox, and I, as much as I don't like NBC, I'd rather have NBC. But if it goes to Fox, I'm immediately canceling my Peacock subscription.
Yeah. Well, if they didn't have the same production people that NASCAR does, it might be okay if they get the right production people in there. Because that's the issue with NASCAR is the production side.
Hire Alan Bestwick.
Well, that's the other thing, too. Though, again, the booth is not the problem. Yes, it would be great if they had Alan Bestwick, but the booth is not the issue. The production is the issue.
I don't know. So, every time I watch the 500 and see the production quality that they put into that, I don't want anybody else doing IndyCar.
Right. Like, I wonder if Fox got the whole IndyCar season, if they could get the same production people that NBC uses for IndyCar.
Maybe. I doubt it.
I mean, it's possible.
There's probably some stupid non-compete clause in there.
Probably. The camera people are shared between networks. Like, it's the same camera people year-round for NASCAR. It doesn't matter if it's on Fox or NBC. It's always the same people on cameras. So, because they're like freelancers or something. So, maybe they could work out something like that with production? I don't know.
No, I have no idea.
I don't know. But yeah, more than likely Fox would be a not good thing for IndyCar if that happened. Lots of silly season news, though, happening right now in the Cup Series, including Stewart Haas Racing not coming back next year officially. That has been announced now. They did, was it Tuesday this week? They let all their employees know that they would be discontinuing everything at the end of the season.
Yeah, something like that.
Apparently Haas wants to focus more on F1, which probably needs more focus on F1.
They just quit F1.
Yeah, right. Well, I don't know, though. Maybe if he puts more focus on it, if he's not distracted by NASCAR, maybe it'll be a halfway decent team. Because that's the thing. That team at one point wasn't terrible. What was that, like 2018 or 2019, when they were like near the top of the midfield?
Yeah, well, right when they started, when they were basically using Ferrari parts, yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. But either way, yes, it is 100% confirmed now that SHR will not exist next year in Cup or Xfinity. Lots of rumors going around as to where all of those drivers will land. Front Row has been confirmed to be getting one of those charters, and they will be going up to 3 full-time teams next year. I assume 2 of the SHR guys will be going there. Chase Briscoe is rumored to be the number one choice for replacing Harrison Burton at the Wood Brothers. So that makes me think it's probably going to be Gragson and Barry going to Front Row. And who knows where Priest ends up. Yeah, and also, who knows where Cole Custer and Riley Herbst end up, too, because everybody's focusing on the Cup side of things, but we forget Cole Custer and Riley Herbst are SHR as well. So who knows what happens to them? I mean, Cole Custer is the defending Xfinity champion, so I would assume somebody would pick him up. Right. I just don't know who. Riley Herbst, on the other hand, that's a little iffy. I don't know if anybody worthwhile will pick him up or not. There is a lot of questions surrounding that right now, though, and we don't have a lot of answers to it at the moment.
Maybe like Sieg or somebody would pick up Herbst.
I could see that. I mean, unless another Ford team comes in and picks up the scraps from SHR, the Sieg team will be the number one Ford team after SHR is gone. So,
which that's not good.
Well, it's not at the moment, but if Ford gives them more backing, it could be okay. They could get up to SHR level if they've got more Ford backing.
I guess I'm just not really sure what Ford's deal is at this point. They, like in Cup, they get a lot to Penske. Other than that, they don't really care. Xfinity, they haven't cared in quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not really sure what the deal is with that.
And I don't think ThorSport gets any backing from them in trucks, is my understanding.
Really?
Yeah. That's interesting. I mean, well, let's be honest. Let's look at ThorSport. Outside of one particular truck that has speed and finds a way every week to not win, Majeski, they don't really have a lot of speed anymore. I mean, yeah. Ben Rhodes is hit or miss because he's Ben Rhodes. Jake Garcia has been getting faster, but still not great. Matt Crafton's on the backside of his career, so he'll have a decent race every once in a while, but nothing spectacular. And then the 66 truck most weeks doesn't do anything, depending on who they have in it.
Timmy Hill.
Yeah. So, no, that's Timmy Hill's in the 66 and Cup and Xfinity. Different team.
Yeah. Still 66. That's a Timmy Hill number.
Fair enough. But yeah, I don't think ThorSport gets Ford backing. Which wild. Makes it all that much funnier that Ty Majeski can be that fast every week and still find a way to screw it up every week. That's about all I got for Cup, though. I feel like we're going to be very short today, but it is what it is. What you got for Open Wheel?
That was probably the best Indy 500 I've ever watched.
Fair enough.
That race is going to be an instant classic. I went to the race, I came home, and I've already watched the whole thing on TV. The whole thing was interesting. After the rain delay, it seemed like, well, Townsend Bell said everybody had too much coffee. Kind of seemed like that. They had a whole bunch of wrecks at the beginning, which kind of made into some different strategy options. I know Connor Daly was one of the ones that went to that other strategy option. He led like 30-something laps in this race. Actually had a shot to win. It just shows that, like, I don't understand why Carpenter sacked Connor in the first place. Because, well, and actually, if you've been watching the 100 Days to Indy, Connor made a pretty funny joke on it the other day. They were talking
to him. I'm a couple episodes behind on that.
They were talking to him for the testing episode with that had the GP in it also. And, he was saying that he had the full season with Carpenter and then got fired halfway through. And then he said, then they realized that I wasn't the problem. Which, I mean, Connor was doing as good or better than Rinus VK the whole race. And I don't know, Ed Carpenter sucks. Christian Rasmussen's going to get himself killed one of these days. I don't understand Carpenter at this point, but whatever. Good showing for Connor. He was biggest mover, qualified 29th, finished 10th.
Nice. I really thought for a little bit that Connor's pit strategy might actually win him the race. Either him or Stingray Robb, which would have been interesting.
See, it would have. So they had a couple yellows towards the end of the race, which made the leaders able to extend it on fuel. Which, I mean, I was watching the race, and when Connor and I think it was Connor, Dixon, Stingray, and maybe Pato were all about the same. And when they pitted, they needed one more stop, and everybody else was going to need two if they didn't have a whole bunch of yellows. But then somebody, I think it was like Will Power's wreck or something, that put everybody else back in and like just barely are able to make it to the end. No stupid red flags at the end of this race, just a generic straight up fight for the win. Little statistics note, there have been 4 Indy 500s that have been decided by a last lap pass. When Marco Andretti lost in 2006 against Sam Harnish, 2011 when Jerry Hildebrand wrecked out of 4 and Dan Weldon won, last year when Newgarden passed Erickson on the last lap, and this year when Newgarden passed Pato on the last lap. And this is the first one in 108 years where there's been 2 lead changes on the last lap.
I didn't know that. So what you're saying with the last lap passes is this particular aero package lends itself to last lap passes.
More of, I think, people realized what they have in this package and just wait until the last lap. Mm-hmm. But this is the first time anybody's been able to pass in 1 and then get back passed in 3.
Yeah, I that definitely caught Pato off guard because, I mean, I was surprised he didn't wait till the backstretch to make the move just to make sure Joseph couldn't. But I guess he figured going into 1, Joseph wouldn't be able to get enough of a run down the backstretch to actually do it.
Yeah, I think that was his thought process. But also, if you go back to 2022, Pato backed out on a move on Erickson going into 1 on the last lap and wasn't able to catch up in 3.
Mm-hmm.
And then last year, went on the inside in 3 on Erickson and wrecked. So he's done literally every combination of passes you can do on the last lap. And
still not won.
Hasn't won. He's going to win at some point. I feel so bad for him because that car was so awful the whole month. And then he drove the wheels off that thing. I don't know how that car survived the race. Did you see the onboard of him in the middle of the race when mm-hmm. he's like this coming out of 2? I glanced over and saw the back end of the car kick out. And I'm like, well, there he goes. And mm-hmm. kept going, oh, whoa, okay. But, I mean, the whole last 10 laps, he was turning right in left-handed corners. And when's the last time you've seen an F1 driver have to overcorrect on the exit of a corner? Those cars are glued to the track. And then you got these guys doing 220 out of the corner turning right.
Well, you know, it's funny because we've talked extensively this season about the Daytona 500 and how much not only William Byron, but Alex Bowman in 2nd didn't really seem to care at the end of the race. Especially Alex Bowman coming that close to winning the biggest race in NASCAR and just didn't really care.
Yep.
Contrast that with Pato's emotions after coming so close again to winning the Indy 500 and not doing it. It's night and day.
Even contrast that with the McLaren 2nd place finish at Monaco.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, oh, cool, we're on the podium. This is great. And then you look at Pato finishing 2nd in the 500, and he's crying getting out of the car.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing on this planet in motorsport like Indy.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. And as someone that is a lifelong diehard NASCAR fan, I can still agree with that and like have no qualms with that because it's true.
Almost 6 million viewers for the 500 this year. That's the most on NBC since the Bucks Lions playoff game, which I believe there was another playoff game on NBC after that, and they had the Super Bowl.
Nice.
More people watched the Indy 500 than the Super Bowl this year.
Nice. I was very disappointed, though, that Larson didn't get to actually do the double. Like, Rain was not his friend on Sunday.
Rain hasn't been anybody's friend the whole month. This is probably the worst weather month for Indy I've seen in my life.
Yeah.
But interesting little nugget that was thrown out this week. The Kyle Larson Hendrick McLaren deal is a 2-year deal.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
I know they asked him after the race if he was going to be back next year, and he said he'd like to be.
Yeah, as far as...
Were they not allowed to say it was a 2-year deal until after the race?
As far as I know, when they signed the contract originally, it was a 2-year deal, and they just kind of covered it up, I guess. I don't know. But apparently, it's been a 2-year deal the entire time, and they should be back next year. I don't know, but I think it's a 2-year deal with Hendrick and McLaren, not Larson, Hendrick, McLaren.
Oh, okay. So technically, it could be somebody else besides Larson next year.
Yeah, but I don't know who the you're going to throw in that car other than Larson next year.
Right.
Duke qualified fifth, was running top 10 most of the race until he ran out of skill coming to pit road. I mean,
yeah. Chase couldn't do that.
No. Well, I remember.
Well, Chase could run out of skill coming onto pit road, but.
Yeah. They cut to the pit road camera as Larson's making that pit stop, and I just glanced at it. And as soon as you went past the pit wall, I'm like, that sucks.
Yeah.
Well, I actually said something about it. I was like, oh, Larson's going to get a penalty there. And like everybody nearby was NASCAR fans. And they're like, what are you talking about? And he comes off pit lane and penalty for the 17. I'm like, that sucks.
Yeah. The thing is, though, really the only things he did wrong all day was that one restart where he shifted to third. And lost all those spots.
Oh, man.
And then speeding coming onto pit road. Other than that, he had a very solid day. So,
yeah, I mean, he did pretty well.
I mean, if he can clean that up and come back next year and not have those mistakes, he might actually win the thing.
He could have a shot. I don't think he had a chance of winning this year. I think
Not this year. I don't think he would have this year. But I think with that extra year of experience under his belt, he might have a shot at winning next year.
Provided the McLarens can come up with the same car as they had this year.
Yeah.
But we'll see. They're going to have the hybrid next year. It's going to be a little different. I don't know what to expect for next year. I didn't expect to have a complete barn burner that we had this year. And the waiting through the rain delay was totally worth it. I can't imagine a better race for this. Lighting was awesome at the end of that race. I've never seen anything on track other than, well, NASCAR because they're stupid with overtime finishes that late at IMS. That was really cool to see. Traffic sucked. That was awful. They sent all the state police home and had everybody like self-police themselves getting out of parking.
Nice.
I got stuck on Lyndhurst for like an hour and a half.
Nice.
Yeah.
I saw a video. Some dude was trying to be the last guy leaving the track that night and he went like 3 hours after the checkered flag and there were still people there. And he's like, all right, I'm giving up. There's a storm rolling in.
That storm was pretty nasty, too. I couldn't see on the way home.
But nice.
Yeah, it was a great race. I'm very happy that with everything that's happened with IndyCar the past couple of years, we had that good of a race. Over 6 million viewers on TV at one point and another 300,000 on Peacock. It was awesome. There's no other way to put that. That race is great. I'm glad they were able to get it in. Even with all the people that are like, just run it Monday. But yeah.
Well, that was the other thing too with Charlotte is I saw a bunch of people like saying, oh, just call the race. It's official now. Just go ahead and call it. People have work tomorrow. So if they can get it in, get it in. Like,
who has work tomorrow? It's Memorial Day.
Right. Well, apparently people in retail have work on Monday, which is fair, but at the same time, don't rain on other people's parade that still want to have racing. Like, don't be that selfish person. Like, why are you being that Debbie Downer?
So come back Monday night after everybody's off work and then run the race.
But then the argument would still be, oh, well, retail works nights too.
Well, then I guess you're just not going to get to see the race until you change your schedule or get a different job.
Yeah.
I took a day off for the 500. You can take a day off for the 600.
Well, that's the thing, too. And it's like, okay, I had work on Monday and I had work on Sunday. But you don't see me saying, oh, call the race because I have to work and I can't see it. Why would
here's
you
what
ruin
I think
everybody
dumb.
Else's day just because you can't see it?
Here's what I think is dumb. With the 500, everybody's like, do not put overtime finishes in here. It's the Indy 500, not the Indy 512 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But they're okay with calling a race short for rain.
Yeah.
So we can't have the Indy 510, but we can have the Indy 300. Like,
right.
I just don't understand what the difference is there.
I don't either. And that's the thing. Like, there's always going to be those people, like, you're never going to make everybody 100% happy. But, like, some people just don't make sense.
No.
I don't get it. Like, are you a racing fan or are you not? Like, if you're a racing fan, shouldn't you want the race to go to completion? Oh no, I won't get to see it. Okay, well, avoid the internet for a couple hours after you get off work and watch the replay of the race. Like, it's not that hard.
Yeah, I don't know. I would rather watch a race go to completion than Charlotte end at, what, like lap 259 or something. I thought that was pretty pathetic, especially since they could have gotten the track dried and they were in the race.
And they were almost before. Had it dry.
Like, they run the race close. Later than that before anyway. They've done like Daytona until 3 a.m. a couple times. I don't know. NASCAR keeps having like these big things. Like, I'm not going to say that IndyCar people would have had a big ratings boost on NASCAR this weekend, but you had Larson who ran the 500 and then went to Charlotte to try to get in his car and run the rest of that race. I feel like there would have been a little bit more viewership, even if, with it being that late, just because of what he did that day. And I don't know. I just think it's stupid. But
I want to know how many people genuinely watched the majority of the NASCAR race live. Because with as late as Indy went, the Indy finished at like the halfway point of the 600.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had both of them pulled up at work, but was paying more attention to Indy. And once Indy finished, I finally flipped over and started paying attention to the 600. And they were literally in their little halftime break doing their moment of silence for Memorial Day.
Well, the like minute by minute viewership for the 500 had the most viewership in the last like 10 laps. So I assume like a bunch of people just had like each channel up and then just switch to the 500 for the end of the race and then switch back to the 600 or something. But I mean, average viewership for the 500 was 5.3 million. And for the last like 10 laps, it was 6.5 or something.
Would that count though? Or would that count for both races? If you had both races open in separate tabs, wouldn't that count you as a viewer for both races minute by minute?
I think it only registers like cable stuff. So you'd have like just flip between channels.
Yeah.
Which I don't watch
cable anymore.
I don't know. I haven't had cable since I moved out of my parents' house.
I mean, I've got YouTube TV, so.
Yeah, me and too.
It's not like exorbitantly cheaper than cable, but it is cheaper than cable.
I know. Well, actually, in Terre Haute, I had cable with Wi-Fi through like Spectrum or something. And I know that up here with my YouTube TV and my Xfinity internet, those two separately, like if I add them together, is cheaper than my Spectrum cable and internet subscription.
I believe it.
So the cable
Spectrum's expensive in the first place. I have Spectrum now because it's my only option if I want anything more than dial up.
Yeah.
And it's not cheap.
No, Spectrum definitely not worth it, and kind of has monopoly on that whole area. But
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I've been impressed with my Xfinity so far.
I liked my Xfinity in when it worked. The problem was that it went out all the time. The folks in the chat will understand this. The running joke on this channel when I would do a stream was that we'd have hillbilly internet because it would just go out randomly for no reason. That was the running joke. I had hillbilly internet.
My power flickered the other day and it killed my modem, so I had to go down to Valpo and trade it in, but they gave it to me for free and just here you go kind of stuff. So
yeah,
I don't know.
I had my first outage on Spectrum last night. It for how long has it been that I've been living here? Like 6-7 months or something now? First outage last night, and it was at like 1 o'clock in the morning. So me, that actually affected. Most people that probably didn't affect, but me being the guy that works second shift and then stays up until 4 o'clock in the morning, that actually kind of affected. F1 ran this weekend too. Monaco did not have a single pass within the top 10, I don't think.
Nope. Even Verstappen pitted for fresh tires towards the end of the race and couldn't get back past
Russell.
It was Russell. Which
that track is not made for passing. But
nope.
Good to see a Leclerc win. Good to see him win his home race. Good to see multiple someones have more speed than Red Bull.
I don't really. I mean, Verstappen just had a bad qualifying lap. I don't think they had more speed than him. They just couldn't. He just couldn't pass anybody.
I guess we'll see next week. I know I saw some articles where Verstappen was talking about that Ferrari had a lot of speed this weekend, like before the race.
Well, Verstappen says something stupid like that before every race weekend. If you actually listen to what he says in practice, the entirety of the three practice sessions, it's, this car sucks. What did you do to this car? It's terrible. And then he gets pole by like half a second. And it's like,
yeah,
well, I guess the car's not that bad.
Or like the race where he got pole and they told him and he's just like, lol.
Yeah, right? I just, like, all these F1 media sites will post random quotes from Verstappen in practice. Oh, the car sucks, it's terrible. And you're like, this is going to be a great weekend. He's not going to win. And then he gets pole and wins the race. Like, great.
I don't know. McLaren has been right up there with him lately. So I think at least McLaren might give him a shot at the end of the season. And hopefully Ferrari does too. Leclerc is still within striking distance that if he can string together some good races with some wins, he could still fight Max for this championship.
Yeah, I mean, he's closer right now than Perez was for second place last year at this point. So
yeah, so it's still possible. If Ferrari actually does have the speed and this wasn't a one-off, this could still be a decent championship battle.
Yeah, I think they're going to get there towards the end of the year. I don't think anybody's going to have anything for the championship for him, but I don't know. At least, like, I want somewhere in the year for there to be some sort of interesting race where there's a couple lead changes.
Mm-hmm.
It's all I'm asking for.
Right.
And then we go to the 500 where there's, like, 600-something on-track passes, and it's, I don't know.
It was funny near the end of the race where we basically had Tony Stewart show up and possess Verstappen and Russell. Did you see that?
No.
Where they were talking about how boring the race was, and they were starting to suggest different ways that, like, they could have made the race better, like mandate a nap in the middle of the race or go out on two tires for a couple laps. And
I just wish we could have crashed more cars today.
Yep. We're running a figure eight, run half the cars the right way, half the cars backward.
That was probably one of my favorite rants ever.
Yep.
And the fact it was Tony Stewart made it even better.
Exactly.
What a guy.
Yep.
I'm sad he won't be in NASCAR anymore.
I know, right? Well, supposedly he is still going to have an ownership stake in Front Row. That hasn't been announced, but that was part of the rumor before all of this. So I think that's still a possibility. I don't think he's completely getting out of NASCAR just yet. But we'll see. Also, that reminds me. I almost forgot about this. I did see some news earlier that NASCAR is cutting the car limit for teams to 3 cars. Hendrick and Gibbs are getting grandfathered into that. So they're obviously not going to have to cut anybody yet, but if they ever go down to 3, they can't go back to 4.
I guess I'm just not really sure what the point of that is.
To let new teams in.
But you've got, like, Rick Ware and stuff that are already in there with charters and
bad. Who have been surprisingly decent this year.
I don't know. I don't see
Justin how Haley has been kind of fast, at least for Rick Ware standards.
I just don't see how limiting big team cars gets more people in when we can't even get the 40 full-time entries anyway.
Right. Like, it's not a matter of new teams, it's a matter of more charters or just not having charters. Charters are the issue on why we can't have a full field anywhere outside of Daytona.
We went from 43 full-time cars to 40 to now 36 full-time, and then you're going to try to cut cars from the bigger teams too? I guess the thought process here is if you get rid of the bigger team cars, then those guys are going to have to go to smaller teams and create a team, but really, if you, with the charter system, you can't create a team anymore.
I mean,
you have to have millions of dollars to get a charter.
I think the thought process is there that might free up some charters, but realistically, once the SHR charters are out in the wild and they've been picked up, there's no other charters to free up from 4-car teams until Hendrick and Gibbs downsize.
Doesn't Front Row already have 2?
I think they're leasing one.
They're leasing one? If you can lease charters, what's the point of having the four charter or three charter limit anyway?
I don't know.
Because you can just have your three and then like lease four more and be like, well, we don't have seven charters.
Wait, no. Yes, they do have two charters. They're only buying one from SHR and they're going to three cars next year.
Oh, so they're getting three and then Trackhouse is going to have three and then there's just two charters. Woo.
I think 2311 is going to get at least one of them. I don't know where the other one's going to go.
Woo.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I agree. I've always been of the mindset to just get rid of the team limit altogether. Like, if the big teams have enough money, I don't see it being that big of an issue to have 10 Hendrick cars, 8 Gibbs cars, 7 Penske cars. Like, if they're going to be competitive, I don't really see an issue with that.
No, if I've got 10 cars battling for the lead and they're all from one team, I don't really care.
I mean, I guess, but at the same time, if they're going to be competitive, I don't see why that wouldn't make the racing better, because at the end of the day, you're letting more competitive cars in, whereas if you're limiting how many teams that the big teams can have, realistically, all you're doing, at least in the short term, is letting more backmarker teams in. They're employing the ARCA strategy. All ARCA cares about is the field getting bigger. They don't care about more cars at the front of the pack. They just want more cars on track, period.
Battle for 29th place in ARCA going silly right now.
Yeah, but right.
It just feels
like, if they can get 29 cars.
It just feels like with limiting team sizes, you're just making it more of an exclusive group for, like, as far as mechanics and stuff like that go. Because, like, the teams that employ four full-time teams, that's a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to convince me that if Hendrick cut out a team, all of those guys are going to be able to find a landing spot? No.
I mean, hypothetically, I think the thought process there is, I'm not saying this is correct, but the thought process there is, if you free it up and you make Hendrick and Gibbs go down to three cars, that opens up two new slots. You've got two drivers that are on the market. Hypothetically, that could create new teams somewhere else, either brand new teams or new cars at existing teams that don't have three cars yet.
I would understand that thought process if you had like a wait line of 7 or 8 teams that wanted to start a team. But the problem already is you don't even have a full field.
I mean, you don't have a wait line of 7 or 8 teams, but we know Junior Motorsports is trying to get into Cup. I'd have to imagine there's another 1 or 2 Xfinity or truck teams that would be interested if there were charters available.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, but even then, like, Rick Ware's charters, you could probably convince Rick Ware to buy out his charter if you're a truck team and you really want to be in Cup. But the problem is, even if you free up these other charters, everybody's going to have a bid on this. It's not like you free up a charter and it's just going to go to whichever truck team wants to start a Cup team. Like, everybody else that's in Cup and everybody else everywhere also gets a chance to bid at it, and you're back to square one, where somebody with a ton of money and not a lot of racing experience has a charter now.
But how many teams feasibly would be in the running for that? How many don't already have three teams at this point? I mean, what, RCR? Trackhouse is going to have their third now. 2311 will probably have their third now. Front Row will have a third. How many other, like, Rick Ware could pick up a third, I guess? Spire has a third now.
I'd argue, like, RCR, Rick Ware, those teams have been around for a while and never ran a third full-time car anyway. I don't think they would even be interested.
RCR has, at one point. RCR had, like, 4 at one point.
When?
In the, like, around 2010.
Oh, okay. So, it's been a while.
Oh, yeah, it's been a while, because back in the Paul Menard days, because you had the 27, the 29, the 31, and the 33.
Oh, right. Okay. But it's been a while, and they haven't tried to go back to that anytime recently.
Yeah. Well, haven't tried to go back to it because they haven't been able to get a charter.
Yeah. I don't know. I just feel like if you're a big team, you really want to run more than more cars than charters you have, you can still run another car, but because there's what, 36 charters and 40 spots?
Yeah. I mean, yes, hypothetically, right now you could, since unless it's the Daytona 500 or the Coke 600, you're not getting a full field as is. So you could run a third car and it still would be guaranteed in every week. But the issue there is, I think what is holding that back is because of how the purse money is allocated between charter teams and non-charter teams. That's the reason we don't see a lot of charter cars or non-charter cars outside of the really big races, because you don't make anything showing up as a non-charter car.
I mean, literally what they did is made an exclusive club and then go, I don't know why people aren't trying to come in here.
Yep. That's exactly what they did.
Kind of seems like
they went the F1 route, basically.
It kind of seems like that's what IndyCar is trying to do with their charter deal, which, from my understanding, the recent negotiations with the IndyCar charter is it'll be for the whole season except the 500. There's still no charters for the 500.
What would be the point in doing it if you're not going to do it for every race? Like, I understand it's supposed not to make doing it for the 500 because you want to be able to allow whoever into that race, but why do it at all then?
It's supposed to make it more valuable to have a team. They're trying to do the same thing as NASCAR, where, like, having this little token makes it more valuable, so that way if you're trying to get out, then you have something to liquidate, I guess. The whole charter thing, I think, is stupid anyway.
It is.
I think if you've gotten to the point with motorsport that you need a charter to have a successful team, then you've f***ed up somewhere anyway.
But the problem is, again, though, they are kind of going the F1 route, because F1 doesn't specifically have charters, but it is very hard to get in as a new team there, as Andretti has found out. So while they don't specifically have charters, I think essentially that's what NASCAR and IndyCar are looking at with these charter systems, and that's what they're going for.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they think they can make a quick buck off of somebody coming in new. I don't get it. But
that's the thing. Do they? I don't know. I don't know how that works, but I don't think NASCAR makes the money off charter sales. It's literally money like paid directly to the team that owns the charter. I don't think NASCAR makes any. I might be wrong on that, but I don't think NASCAR makes any money off of that.
I don't know. That, of course, I think NASCAR's was a team owner thing, not a NASCAR. Right? Like, the team owners settled on the charter system, not NASCAR itself.
I think they did. Like, NASCAR is the one that runs the charter system and oversees it, but I think it was
the teams that set it up
and basically pushed onto NASCAR by the team owners, the RPA. So
it would make sense for NASCAR to not be making anything off of that, I guess.
Which makes you wonder why NASCAR would want to keep it, which apparently they don't, because they're trying to get rid of it and the team owners are pushing back. I think that's all we've got to talk about this week. So let's get on to picks. We've only got one pick to look back on because we skipped last week. Did not have an episode last week, so we just need to look back at the North Wilkesboro truck pick, because that week we didn't have any other points picks to make. Tyler retakes the truck point lead with his Corey Heim winner pick. So that is, what, your third win pick of the season between trucks and Xfinity, I think? I think we talked about this last time. This is now your second truck win pick, and I think you've got one in Xfinity. Outpointed me picking Butterbean. I mean, Butterbean looked good, but I don't think he was ever going to win that race. 49-33, so Tyler now leads by 11, 372-361 in trucks. On to this week's picks. We got a few races this week. We've got ARCA West. We've got trucks. We've got Xfinity. We've got Cup. We've got IndyCar. And we've got F1, which we're not going to make F1 picks. We might have to start making F1 picks, though, if Ferrari and McLaren are actually going to, like, put up a fight. We might actually have to make some picks for that. It might not be such a given that Max Verstappen wins.
Reevaluate halfway through the season.
Yeah, right? We'll go ARCA West first. They will be at Portland this weekend for the Portland 112. Saturday? Friday, 7 p.m. Eastern on Flow Racing. Tyler, who wins the Portland 112?
Jake Finch. I don't know. It's a Venturini car. That's as much as I care about ARCA.
Fair enough. It is. You are correct. It is a Venturini car. My only hesitation with Jake Finch, though, would be I don't know how much road course experience he has.
So you're scared of turning right.
Well, fair enough. I mean, you got guys like Marco Andretti and William Sawalich, we know, has run road courses. I don't know how much experience Gio Ruggiero has on road courses. But
I think you're overselling Marco Andretti there a little bit.
I mean, he at least has road course experience. He can't even turn left anymore. Huh?
He can't even turn left anymore.
Fair enough. Either way, there's some options there. I'm going to go with William Sawalich. I didn't look back through the stats, but I'm pretty sure he has at least one ARCA road course win up to now. So he seems like a pretty solid pick here. On to trucks. Trucks will be at Gateway this weekend. If I can get the page to load. There we go. The Toyota 200, Saturday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern on Big Fox. That is the only race of the weekend on Big Fox. Xfinity and Cup are both on FS1.
Nice.
What? Whatever. 1:30 p.m. Eastern Saturday on Fox, the Toyota 200. Tyler, who wins a Gateway?
Oh, you already know.
I do already know, and I'm disappointed you got this pick before I did.
It's going to be Christian Eckes.
You know, I say that, and this has been historically his best track in both trucks and ARCA, but he has had a lot of bad luck here. So we'll see if that bad luck continues. I'm going to go with Tanner Gray only because Tanner has actually showed some speed recently. So maybe we might see a Tanner Gray win for once in trucks. He finally picked up a main ARCA win this week at Charlotte. So maybe he carries that momentum. I mean, he carried that momentum into the truck race and ran really well. So maybe it continues this week at Gateway. Xfinity will be the main ticket of the weekend from Portland, the Pacific Office Automation 147, Saturday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern on FS1. Tyler, who wins for the Pacific Office Automation 147? That is such a mouthful.
I'm going to go with Sheldon Creed. He did really well here last year. Couldn't quite pull it together, but led a lot of laps in that race. I think he'll be able to. He hasn't won it for this year, has he?
No, he hasn't.
I think he'll be able to punch his way in and get his first win at Toyota.
Fair enough. First win, period. He hasn't won an Xfinity race yet.
Oh, yeah.
Should have won Martinsville last year until Austin Hill. Yeah. But that's neither here nor there. I'm going to go with SVG because SVG. It's a road course. It's SVG. I think SVG wins. On to the Cup race, the Enjoy Illinois 300, Sunday, 3:30 p.m. Eastern on FS1 from Gateway. Tyler, who enjoys Illinois this week?
This is going to sound so sacrilegious. I am picking Denny Hamlin this weekend.
Clutches pearls.
Yeah, I know. I don't feel very good about it, but we'll see. I think this is a track that the Toyotas are going to do really well on this year. I think Denny Hamlin's probably the best Toyota right now. It could be Martin Truex Jr. too, but I'm just going to stick with Denny.
Fair enough. I'm going to go with William Byron just to make you mad if Byron wins and you didn't pick him.
Yeah, I'll still be happy. It's a Byron win. I don't care.
Fair enough. IndyCar this weekend are on the streets of Detroit. The Chevy Detroit Grand Prix. Sunday at noon on USA. Tyler, who wins in Detroit?
No, Alex Palou is going to get back to being Alex Palou and winning like the rest of the year. He won, or he led like 80% of this race last year and won it. It was flawless the entire weekend last year. I don't think anything changes this week. I don't know. The Ganassi cars are really good on road courses or street courses now, especially this one. I don't know why they're so good at this one now, but yeah, I don't think there's a way anybody other than Palou wins this weekend.
I do, because I think Pato O'Ward wins. I think he is going to channel that disappointment from Indy into this race and come out swinging and win in Detroit.
I love Pato, but I don't think there's a wall he didn't hit in Detroit last year.
Fair enough. We'll see. F1 back this weekend?
Probably.
No, they are not. They're in Canada next week.
Oh, Canada. Yeah, because it's always my birthday weekend. Yay.
Oh, nice. Well, happy early birthday.
Oh, thanks.
In case I forget to tell you on next week's episode.
Yeah, you probably will.
Probably. So that is going to be it for this week. Lots of action and non-action happening this weekend from Charlotte and Indy and Monaco. And hopefully a lot more action happening this weekend from Gateway, Detroit, and Portland. So thanks for hanging out, y'all. We'll see you hopefully next week, same time, same place. At that, I'm Garth. That's Tyler. And this is the Rookie Stripes Podcast on Racing News Now.